Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I know I left yesterday kind of confusing, Tim.
You did, yeah.
I made it sound like we wouldn't be back till next week when, all fact, we're back today. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I record 8 shows a week, man. I can't remember what days I'm recording for what weeks and what weeks I'm recording for what months. My mind is melting, Tim.
Well, we do that Sunday gig, too, so we're here, though.
Yeah. 7 days a week plus True Crime Tuesday, 8 days a week. There's got to be some kind of child labor laws against this.
Oh, well, you're an adult. No, you're fine.
Yeah, my wife would tell you I'm very childish, Tim, so I think that it should still fit under child labor laws. All right, we are back. We've got a brand new episode for you a little bit later. Theater of the Mind, very interesting Theater of the Mind. And you'll have to forgive me, folks. I was unable to get Nyx or one of our normal female voice over people to fill in and do the voice of the narrative. So I always feel bad when I get, you know, I get a lot of letters from women, Tim, and I avoid them because I can't always get somebody to do the reading. So a lot of the stories people notice are either my stories or men's stories.
And I do a terrible female voice, Dave. I don't know if you've noticed. Yeah, I do.
So today we're actually from somebody in the forestry industry, in the forest security. I can't think of the damn word right now. Anyway, she sent in a story regarding a really fascinating case, and I didn't have time to find a female voice, so I just did the regular narrative. So I apologize so she doesn't think, what the hell? Other women get female voices. I get Dave. So I apologize. It's still a great story.
Yeah.
What a great, weird, interesting story. So thank you for sharing that for me. And I think Tim did a great job. You guys are going to like that Theater of the Mind coming up in just a little bit. But first, Tim, it's time to speak with our guest. Now, while growing up in a Midwestern funeral home where her dad was an undertaker, our guest, Margot Lenmark, not only learned about death, but she also received clear messages from deceased loved ones. She's here with us to talk about her new book. It's called Light in the Morning, Memoirs of an Undertaker's Daughter. Margot Lenmark, our guest. Margot, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You know, if there was one job in the world that you would say, Dave Schrader, I will pay you $2 million a year to be an undertaker, I would gladly sidestep and let Tim take that job, and I would rather work in an adult bookstore as a floor mopper. I am so unnerved by death as it is, but then to be an undertaker, I can't even imagine being an undertaker, let alone having children there and around this. What was that like for you? I mean, was it unusual, or was that just something you were brought up with, so it was always part of your world?
It was always part of my world. As long as I can remember, I was at the funeral home. We didn't grow up in the funeral home, but we were always there, you know, meeting my father for a ride home from school. And after church, we'd go over there and meet him, get a ride home. And so I was around it so much that it was just absolutely natural to me. I can imagine that you wouldn't feel that way if you didn't grow up around it. But yeah, I wasn't spooked by it, nothing. It just felt natural. It was everyday life.
And now, was this one of those type of businesses where you lived on premises?
No, we did not live at the funeral home.
All right.
No,
good.
We just, yeah, no.
That makes it a little bit more palpable.
yeah, me too.
Yeah, listen, yeah. Even that would freak me out. Yeah, we've talked to people that are children of morticians or morticians, and the people that lived right there on site, and to know you've got, you know, 2-3 cadavers, and they're your neighbors and friends and people from town down in the basement chilling. I just literally chilling. I just don't know that I could do that. Would you be around?
I don't know if I could either.
Yeah. Would you be, I mean, were you around that industry yourself? I mean, would you be on hand while Dad was prepping or doing work?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We sort of had free range the funeral home. And when we were really young, we'd play hide and seek up in the caskets. It was the kind of thing where you had the funeral home, and then on the second floor, you had all, or at the top floor, I don't remember how many floors, but you had all of the caskets. And so my brothers and I would play hide and seek under the caskets, and they'd try to scare me. And, you know, so we played a lot when we were kids. But yeah, we got to go down into the embalming room, and we saw bodies. We were just around dead bodies all the time. And it's when I think about it, the way you put it, it's kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's not. I mean, it's for you, it's good.
Yeah. For me, it was everyday life, but yeah. It's kind of strange to have that as your everyday life.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I guess somebody's got to do it, right? You know, there's a place in the world for everybody. Now, how, you know, just out of curiosity, your father was the mortician, right?
Yes.
Did he feel this was a calling? Was it just good money? What, you know, how does one get involved in that field?
Well, my father actually went to engineering school. He ended up going to mortuary school. But he, his father, when he died, willed, asked my father to carry on the funeral home. It wasn't in his will, but he asked him, and as his deathbed wish, to carry on the funeral home. So my father then went to mortuary school and did that.
Okay.
And so he was asked to do it by his father.
He was that's a different age then, when your father asks you to take over the family business and you do it. My kids don't want the family business.
And my brothers didn't want it from my father either. So yeah. I understand. I think it is definitely a different age.
My kids are like, Dad, no, I don't want to sit around in my boxers talking to a microphone. That's weird. So too much information.
Talking to an undertaker's daughter.
No, that's the part they're okay with.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my kids love this kind of stuff, but it's just, like I said, just kind of getting that feel for it. Now, growing up, you know, was there strange spiritual activity that took place? And, you know, would your dad ever talk to you about it if it was?
No, I don't know if he would have talked to me about it, but I didn't sense any of that at all. None. I did, as people, when I got older and people around me started to die, I did get very clear messages from them about life. And so I've had my own experience with this whole subject of death, but it didn't really come from the childhood funeral home. Maybe it came from being around it and being so comfortable with the subject that I'm more open than other people. I don't know, but I don't know if he would, I don't think he would have talked to us about it if anything kind of strange happened. And I didn't hear of anything like that from him.
So you said you would get messages.
Yeah.
All right. So how did, at what age would you start getting these messages?
Well, I was in my 20s. I think let me back up a little bit. When I was growing up, I would have all of these kind of precognitive experiences. And what I mean by that is I would see that something was going to happen right before it happened. I would kind of see in my mind that someone was going to walk through the door, and 2 minutes later, that person walked through the door. I saw in my mind that our house was going to burn down one night, and I was young, and I went to bed crying, and sure enough, our house burned down that night. And, you know, I had all these kind of precognitive experiences that were very natural to me. And so when people...
Oh, now you had a precognitive idea that the house was going to burn down. Is there any chance that that's because you left a candle burning in the basement that night and you were worried about it? Okay.
No.
Just asking. Fact, you never know.
Yeah, I know. Good question. But what I did instead was my brother came home, and I remember getting up and making sure that the stove was turned off. I unplugged all the lamps. I did everything I could, but I didn't go to my parents, because what do you do when, I mean, what do you do with that? You're a kid. And I didn't know what to do with that, but I kind of saw it in my mind and I went to sleep and I cried myself to sleep. And this story is in the book actually. And then in the middle of the night, my brother was waking me up to get up because the house was burning down. The furnace blew up downstairs. My father had just remodeled the house and the carpet got all, you know, the pile on the carpet got caught in the furnace and blew it up. So that's what happened. But I tried to prevent it by unplugging lamps and stuff, you know, anything I could think of to do.
But did anyone else in your family have sensitivity like this, that they would have precognition or sense things?
No, not that I know of. My brothers recently read my book and they were really surprised. They're like, wow, this is really interesting, because it was their life too, you know? And it's really interesting when you all live under the same roof, but you all have a different kind of perception of things. And they were really interested to hear these messages that I got from like our mother and my brother. And, you know, I think it was pretty fascinating to them. And they thought the messages were really important. And I feel like, every message I got completely changed how I live my life. And because there's such a deep experience when you have a cognition like that from somebody, or somebody talks to you in a dream and they tell you something about life, it really changes how, because it's a real experience, it changes how you live your life. It makes sense. And it makes more sense out of your life then when you can kind of prioritize the important things that you get, you know, from people who've passed over and they come back and tell you.
Right. So you had these
kind of what we want.
You had these precognitive issues. So you'd see these things, they would happen. How did you learn to deal with that and accept that as part of your, just that's part of your normal?
Well, I didn't know it wasn't normal. You know, to me, things like that always happened. And so it was just pretty natural for me, to experience that. And so,
But yet your brothers weren't afraid that the house was going to burn down. Nobody talked about it. So you had to realize it wasn't normal, because you were afraid to even talk to your parents about it, because what are they going to think? You're crazy. So if you just...
Yeah, you're a kid and you think, you know, I mean, what's the basis of you saying that? You know, and it's just this deep inner kind of knowing or something. So it's a, I don't know, what is it, an intuition? I'm not sure what to call it. And that's why I call it kind of a cognition. Because a cognition is like seeing something with your eyes, but it's still in your mind. I mean, I think that would probably be the best way to describe a cognition. And so I guess deep feeling, deep intuition, there's just this impulse, this feeling that was going to happen. But that's all I had. You know, what do you do with that? I mean, what if it's not true? What if you are crazy? You know, but you know, I don't know. I was really familiar with that type of experience because I'd had it quite a few times, and it's nothing that I could manipulate. It's just something that would come to me. So when I was falling asleep, I got this feeling that the house was going to burn down.
Why do you think that would be gifted to you? Why do you, you know, now knowing what you know about your life and these talents, why give somebody that gift of sight, knowing there's nothing they can do about it, especially a child?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I've actually thought about that a lot. I think we all come in with different gifts, if you will. You know, some children, they're, you know, child prodigies, you know, they're 3 years old and they're playing the piano. How did they get that? You know, so I think we just come in with certain avenues within us that are more open than other people in that way. And it's not that I was more gifted than other people. I was just more gifted in that way, I think, than other people. You know, other people have different talents, but that kind of happened to be mine. But I don't know. I don't know. You know, that's part of the mystery of life, isn't it? I can't figure out why.
Were you frustrated by that, though? I mean, the fact that you're able to see something like this and you couldn't really tell anybody, and there was nothing you could do to stop what you saw, you know, was about to happen.
You know, let me think. I think that's the only time something happened bad. you know, I, everything else, I would just sort of see something as it happened, or somebody would come to me. You know, I was a little kid, I was 10 or something, and somebody would come to me with their problem. I could see the solution in my mind to their problem, and I would tell them, and they'd run home excited because that was correct, you know? So, this is the only time it happened when something really bad happened. So, I guess I didn't have time to be frustrated. I went to bed. I remember crying myself to sleep, and then I fell asleep, and then I got up in the middle of the night because the house was on fire. And then after that, you're just in emergency mode, you know? So
maybe there was something to the fact that you had done other protocols so that the fire didn't get worse, or, you know, you made sure the oven was turned off. You made sure everything was taken care of, so there wasn't gas leaking. There was nothing else that could have taken that explosion up further and killed you or your family. I guess there's that aspect of the story to look at as well.
You know, I never even thought of that. That's really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe I prevented something.
Could I get your credit card for $42.99? Since I'm giving you ideas, I like to charge for it so it doesn't feel like...
I think I'll start an 800 number. Ask me anything.
Yes. All right. So now, yeah, well, I mean, that very well could be it. Maybe that was the gift. Maybe it wasn't that you were going to be able to do anything to stop the explosion, but your preparedness made it so that it didn't get worse and nothing else happened. Interesting.
That is really interesting. No, I think that's very interesting. That's really cool.
I'm having my own after cognition.
See, you're having a cognition.
It's a post cognition. I have a lot of those on Monday morning after I watch the Vikings lose. I see a lot of ways for them to have been better. Doesn't do me a lot of good either, but it's a gift, I guess. Maybe a curse. I don't know, Tim. Tim, you're a lifelong Vikings fan. Is that a gift or a curse when we can see all the things that were wrong the next day?
I've had those for about 42 years now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a curse. Definitely a curse.
It's a curse.
You'd have these precognition. Were people unnerved by the fact that you would say this? And as a little child, you were kind of, you had this intuition and knowledge?
No, I don't think, you know, it wasn't, it's hard to explain. It was such a natural ability, and it wasn't everything I said or anything like that. It was just when people would ask me like about their problems, somehow I'd know. And then they'd come to me with another problem. They just thought I was probably wise or something. I don't know what they thought when we were 10 or 12, or what do you think when you're that age? I really don't know. And I don't even think I talked to my parents about it. It's just something that was natural to me. That's probably the best way to put it. It didn't seem out of the norm at all. I could just see something, I'd tell them, and they go, great, thanks. And they run home and their problem would be fixed, you know? And
so when did it start to step up from precognitive and just kind of knowing to actual communication with the spirit world?
Well, okay. The thing is with me, it's not communication with the spirit world at all times or anything like that. I really don't feel like I have any control over whether I can communicate with somebody. They come to me, and I couldn't try to make somebody come to me. I couldn't find somebody. It's not like that. It's not like this kind of psychic ability. It's just, I guess I'm just very sensitive, as you say, or aware. And when somebody does come to me, it's clear. I know it.
Right. But there had to be a time that it went from just being precognitive to suddenly being aware of spirits, even though you're saying you're not mediumistic in the sense, but there had to be, was there an age when all of a sudden that new light turned on?
No, it was just the same kind of light. It was the same thing. It was that same ability, just directed now with people who have died that are close to me. And it's not just anybody who's died. There's been a lot of people that are close to me that haven't come to me, so I can't tell you a thing about them. You know, I don't know anything.
Now, knowing that then, Margo, could it be that when somebody would come to you and you were at the tender age of 10 and really should have not had that world knowledge of how to help them, do you think now in reflection, let's go some post-cognition again, could it have been that the spirits were there giving you that answer to begin with at that time, and you didn't realize it? You thought it was just intuition, but what it was the spirit of maybe whoever was with them, their guide, their loved one, their angel, that might have been relaying that information through you, the conduit.
Yes, it absolutely could have been. it could have been. It didn't feel like that to me because to me it was just like, what would happen is, let's go back to my friend had a problem at home and she'd come to me and we'd talk about it. I'd hear the whole thing. And then at one point it would just gather in my mind and I would see what happened, why that went wrong and what she was doing wrong or what the parents were doing, whatever the problem was, I would see it. And I would just say, oh, blah, blah, blah. And she, oh, great. And then she'd go home and it would all change. So I think it's all just the same ability, but yes, it could be somebody from the other side helping me. And I'm the aware one at that moment that kind of picks up on it. But that skill or gift or whatever that is, it's kind of been intertwined throughout my life from that age up until now. I've even noticed it in marketing. I'm in real estate right now, and I had a friend come to me and ask me if I would help him with some ideas on marketing his house. And he didn't come to me because of disability or anything. And I wasn't thinking about that. I said, yeah, let's just talk about your house and let's see what I think. So I went to look at the house and we started talking, and then it just all of a sudden this marketing plan came to me and I told him, this is what you need to do. So I told him everything. He went and did it. He sold those houses. And I went, wow, it even works in other areas. And I was really surprised when that happened to me because I wasn't thinking about anything like that at all. I was just going to look at the house and see if I could come up with any ideas for him. But that same kind of cognitive thing came up in my mind about selling his house. I mean, believe me, I wish I could use it in my own real estate marketing. I'd make a fortune, but it doesn't work that way. It happens when it happens, and I don't seem to have any control over it.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because I have been throughout my life very good at marketing, very mm-hmm. good at marketing, and have always kind of intuitively been able to kind of pick up on people. Not, I wouldn't say their thoughts, but in their, you know, just kind of being able to vibe on them and pick up on that. And I was always really very good with sales. Now, I've had friends since we started doing this radio show. They're like, Dave, you know how sensitive you are, right? You're very attuned to the other worlds. And I'm like, I don't pick that up at all. But now you saying that and thinking about marketing, there would be times I would start talking to someone over the phone, talking about whatever it was that we were discussing for sales. And I would almost see things that gave me a clue in how to approach this person, what to say and what to do to get their attention. And it's kind of fascinating because I wonder if that was this kind of, I was seeing in windows of their life now. That's kind of
yes,
bizarre.
You were. I think you were, because just what you described is what happens to me. Is something will be happening, they'll be talking to me or something, or and then all of a sudden it's just like it forms something that you can see. And you go, oh, there it is. And they go, oh, you're right. Great. Thanks. it's really clear. I mean, what you're talking about is a very clear experience, aren't you? You could see it like you were seeing it with your eyes, but you could see it in your mind, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That's it. That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
Huh. Fascinating. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Well, let's start a psychic hotline.
Yeah. I've already told Tim we're going to do the Psychic Friends Shopping Network. All you need to do is call in with your credit card. We'll know what to send you because we're your psychic friend.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's kind
I'll
of
I'll join that
thing.
Network.
Call 651-300-4977, 651-300-4977. Leave your credit card number and your address. Tim and I will pick something out to send to you and charge you accordingly.
A lot of money.
It's not, we can't put a value on that kind of gift. All right, Margo?
No, you can't. You can't.
All right.
You just got a third partner in that business.
All right. I'll take it.
Okay.
So when you would start realizing that you were hearing spirit or, and is that a fair thing to call it? Do you believe that it really was a disembodied human, a ghost that you were speaking to? Or do you believe that you were speaking to kind of a consciousness that once was? Do you understand the difference in that?
I do. And I don't know exactly how to answer that. So can I explain it just a little different way? Or do you want to ask me that question first and let me
Go ahead. Explain it a different way.
Okay. I want to give you an example in my book that I think is really interesting, and it's the story of my brother. And my brother was coming to me after he died. He came to me in dreams every single night to tell me he hadn't died. He, in the dream, he would... somebody would walk into the dream and be talking to me. And in the dream, he would come up really close to me so that person would see him as they were looking at me. And in all of these dreams, he would do that like, hey, I'm right here. I'm right here. You know, he was trying to let anybody in that dream know that he was alive. And it was very interesting. And so what happened was one night I was talking to his best friend and we were comparing notes, and he said, Mike's coming to me every night in dreams to tell me he hasn't died. And I said, oh my God, he's doing the same with me. And then the light bulb went off. We both realized that Mike didn't know he had died. He just didn't know. He was really trying to tell us in dreams that, hey, I'm right here. I'm alive. So that night I told him, I sat on my bed and cried and told him he had died. I said, you're not in the body anymore. You're here, but you're not, your body isn't here. In fact, we burned it. You're gone. You're not on the planet anymore. And this is why you see me crying every night, because I can't be with you anymore on this planet. And I could feel, he was at the end of my bed. I could feel him there in my room as I was talking to him. I could also feel him, and it was him, and I could feel him understanding what I was saying. It was making sense to him based upon whatever they were telling him on the other side. He was going, I get it. I could feel him really getting that he had died. So obviously they were trying to tell him on the other side, and when I sat there in my bed that night and told him, and I was crying, he really heard the whole thing, and he never came to me in dreams after that. He heard it. He knew he was gone. So that was very interesting.
Yeah. Now, you know, see, here's where my paranoia would come in, Margo.
Mm-hmm.
My paranoia would be, oh crap, maybe I'm dead. Maybe I'm dead.
Maybe we are.
And I think he's dead. What's really happened is I just left that plane and the people that were left behind didn't. So see, that would be my paranoia kicking in then. And, you know, then I'd be thinking the reason he's saying, Margo, I'm not dead, is because he wasn't. And maybe you were haunting him, whatever plane he was in. He was like, I keep seeing the ghost of my sister crying about me being dead, but I'm not dead. See, that there's a whole bunch of weird rabbit holes. Tim, the LSD from college must still be in my system.
I think so. Yeah, you haven't quite shook it yet. Yeah.
Oh,
that's an unbelievable scenario that you just painted. Maybe we're dead. Maybe we are. We're talking about it as if we're alive, but we're really the dead ones.
It would make complete sense with how Tim and I are paid for this radio show.
And think about it. The internet is not heaven. The internet is heaven. It's just a way for us all to connect. There's no way in earthly means that there's a way for us all to connect like this. It has to be the way God put it together so that our souls could all interconnect with each other.
That's right.
All right, pass another tab, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Okay, hold on, Tim. I have another idea. Yeah. What if CAT spelled dog? Yeah, right.
Dave.
Oh, Margo, I kid. Margo Lenmark is our guest today. Light in the Morning, Memoirs of an Undertaker's Daughter. You know, I've got to mention real quickly, folks, 60 seconds. That's exactly how long this ad will take. And you know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, make me a PB&J, or do a few sit-ups, you can get a true cash offer. That was a hint, Tim. Make me a PB&J.
Oh,
best
okay.
of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch your car's details pile up. Answer a few more questions and you're going to get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. I mean, it's just that easy. After that, you can bring your car in. They're going to go over it with you together, and you can ask questions and get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a brand new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. Light in the Morning, Memoirs of an Undertaker's Daughter. We have a link up to that book on today's program, so you can find it easily and pick it up. I love you. Very light spirit about you, and that's great. You know, you never know when I'm going to talk to an Undertaker's daughter. And I got to be honest with you, Tim. My mind was too much in wrestling, because when I saw Memoirs of the Undertaker's Daughter, I thought that this was... I thought that this was going to be the Undertaker from WWE, and she was going to be talking about her life in this. And I'm like, no, Tim, we're not going to do a wrestling show about the Undertaker's daughter. I'm glad that's not the case here.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure she's a delightful girl, the Undertaker's daughter. We'd rather speak to the Undertaker's daughter we're speaking with now, Margo Lenmark. The book is out and available.
Thank you.
And we've got links up to it. So when was it, would you say, that you started to share this gift and realize that other people didn't have it?
Very good question. I would say it was a good maybe 20 years ago. And I'll tell you why I know that, because I remember telling stories about, like, my father and other stories of people who have died and my insights and things. And a friend of mine at the time said, "You know what, Margo, don't take this for granted. Don't take the way your perception, the way you see things, don't take that for granted. Not everybody sees life the way you do." And I thought, oh, really? You know, that's interesting. And then the reason I decided to write this book and write these stories down was around that same time, someone asked me about my father's death. And I told them. And when I got done, she said, "You have got to write this in a book." And I said, "I'm not going to write it in a book. You just asked and I told you, you know." And she said, no, and she made whoever I was standing with promise to hold me to writing the book. And I don't even remember who that person was, because it was 22 years ago. But I do remember that she did promise. And so when my brother died, the same one I was just talking about, when he died, you know, my paradigm just got shattered so much when he died that I thought, okay, maybe it's time to write the book, and whatever comes out of this will be my living memorial to him. So that's when I ended up writing the book. Somebody actually kind of made me do it. They just said, "You have to do this," you know. So that's when I realized that, you know what, I think this is my gift. I think my perception about life and death is my gift, because people have asked why I'm so happy. And the reason I really know happiness is because I've really known pain. I've really gone right straight through the middle of the pain of these deaths. But in the middle of it, I got a gift. And that's where I got all of these messages from people. And what a gift, because it's really enhanced my life and it's changed how I live my life. So does that answer your question?
It
can't
does.
What the question was.
Let's do this. Okay. Let's we have to take a quick break. We've got a brand new edition of Theater of the Mind. We'll be back with more and our guest, Margo Lenmark, right after this.
Today's Theater of the Mind comes from the real life story of Leanne Wilson, the lady of Colt Killed Creek. A strange disappearance allegedly took place on the Clearwater National Forest's Powell Ranger District near the Idaho-Montana state line in the early 2000s. I became aware of the case in October of 2013 after a grizzled old man entered the ranger station where I'm employed and asked to speak with a law enforcement officer. The district Leo and patrol captain were both away from their desks, so I politely asked the nature of his visit. I thought that maybe another employee could assist him. The stooped, soft-spoken gent leaned against the counter and, in a very measured tone, told me that he'd been having recurring and disturbing dreams about that lady that disappeared south of Colt Killed Creek about 10 or 11 years ago. He felt compelled to discuss the case with Forest Service officials, and he defined his feelings as a sense of overwhelming urgency. "I've got to do something," he said. At this point, the man exhaled deeply and began to narrate a story unlike anything I'd heard before. He'd been hunting, he said, on the Powell District, one of his last hunting trips before age and infirmity took their toll, when he noticed an odd-looking fellow coming toward him on a forest trail. The man was several yards ahead, and he appeared to be skipping or springing off of the narrow trail. As the hunter drew closer, the man dove off the path, head first, vanishing into the damp, dense brush that flanked the trail. A few minutes later, he hopped onto the trail about 25 feet in front of the startled hunter. The hunter described the strange man as very short and thin, dark-complected, with a head full of curly, black, dirty-looking hair, thin, scraggly beard. He went on to say that the diminutive man was not dressed for the inclement early November weather. He was wearing faded, ripped, striped shirt and pants that ended just below the knee, and that he may have even been shoeless. Straight away, the raven-haired stranger made a hissing sound, lips curled, teeth clenched, spit flying, before once again diving off the trail and into the scrub. The hunter could hear the crackle of snapping twigs and the rustle of leaves as the little man made his way through the brush, moving quickly at an angle that was diagonal to the trail. Before long, he was gone. The hunter, unnerved by the encounter, returned to his vehicle, which was parked about 2 miles northward. He drove back to his home near Kamaya, Idaho, a distance of about 150 miles, arriving later that night. The following morning, a local newspaper carried the day-old story of a Missoula, Montana woman who'd gone missing while hunting with her husband on the Powell Ranger District. The man was shocked when he read that she'd disappeared from the same location where he'd been the day before. He immediately contacted the investigating agency listed in the newspaper and recounted his meeting with the weird, dark-haired man. Initially, the agent seemed interested in his report, but as time passed, no one followed up, and subsequent attempts to contact authorities about the case failed. About 2 months after the woman's disappearance, the hunter had a vivid dream. He saw a sobbing woman, clad in green and gray camouflage, seated on a floor alongside a small square table. The light was dim and the room was long and narrow. The hunter, in his dream state, could feel the cold, clammy air, and a pungent smell like wet moss filled his nostrils. As his dream moved forward, he heard the jangle of chains, followed by the tiny squeak of lightweight hinges. Suddenly, the strange little man dropped to the floor by way of a rough-cut door in the ceiling. The woman hugged her knees to her chest, burying her face. At this point in the dream, the hunter realized that the woman was being held captive in a travel trailer buried underground. The storyteller said he woke with a jolt, heart racing, sick to his stomach. "I was shaking," he said as he held up his right hand, simulating the tremors. I couldn't relax. I had to get up and watch TV to take my mind off the nightmare." Over time, the memory of his strange backcountry encounter faded. The following summer, the hunter relocated to New Mexico, but after 9 years and a tough battle with cancer, he returned to Idaho. "I missed my mountains and my mama," he said with a crooked grin. In late August of 2013, the hunter settled in for a midday nap. "It was a Sunday," he said, "and I'd spent the morning on a nearby lake. I was bushed. I kicked back in the recliner and was out in no time. All of a sudden, I felt like I was sliding backward into a dark tunnel," the hunter said, his eyes wide. "And then I started to dream. I had the same awful nightmare that I'd had before, start to finish." But the hunter's carbon copy dream wasn't over. "From here," the hunter said, carefully leaning forward and resting his forearms on the countertop, "the scene sort of sped up. I could see that lady, all dirty and thin, hands tied with a grimy rope, being led through the forest. Baggy, faded dress, wet from the moisture on the plants and trees. Tall black boots, like muck boots on her feet." The hunter was contorting his face and using gnarled hands to emphasize this part of his story. "She's different. Older. Long hair. And I see her and that weirdo walk toward an opening in the timber, and then out into a small meadow with clumps of huckleberry brush here and there. Indian paintbrush and bear grass everywhere. Must have been summer." At this point, the storyteller took a deep, rattling breath and coughed.
and then cleared his throat before continuing. They crossed the clearing and stopped near a little pile of dead logger pole. She's standing there, hair blowing in the breeze, dress billowing out, stone-faced, no emotion. The guy, he looks different too. That shaggy hair all bunched up in the back and turning gray above his ears. Beard's mostly gray now. He's wearing an Indianapolis Colts t-shirt, and I remember thinking, where the hell would he get that? The hunter furrowed his brow and looked me square in the face, like he was expecting me to answer his question about the t-shirt. I shook my head, but didn't speak. The hunter sighed, and then continued. Now the weirdo, he reaches down and pulls a couple of skinny poles off to one side. And then he takes a big step forward, bends down and opens a door flush with the ground, like a submarine hatch. The hunter bent slightly, curled his fingers around an imaginary handle, and made an upward pulling motion. They go down in the hole. The lady goes first. And then the door slams shut above them. I can see that the door's a muddy brown color and pasted with moss and leaves. It pretty much fades into the meadow floor. By now, I was hanging on every word the hunter said, completely caught up in his account. Just like the first time, he said softly, I could feel the breeze. I could smell dry pine needles. I felt like I wanted to shield my eyes from the sun. It all felt so real. The hunter shifted his weight to one side and exhaled, shoulders slumping. He stood silently, looking past my right ear. He blinked once or twice. Ma'am, he said softly, I think that lady's still out there. I think that guy's got her holed up in a place that no one will ever look. Hell, I'll bet they've even given up on her. They probably think a bear or a cougar got her, or that she just ran off on her own. But if there's a chance that she's alive, that she could be rescued, well, I just can't give up. The old man swallowed, stepped back from the counter and straightened up. He raised his eyebrows, shook his head slowly and said again, I just can't give up. With this, the hunter patted the back of my right hand, smiled and winked. Thank you for your time, young lady. I'll drop by again. Maybe I can catch one of your law enforcement officers next time. The hunter shuffled slowly toward the lobby doors and disappeared into the parking lot. A few days later, I hesitantly passed along the hunter's strange account to the district Leo, who, much to my surprise, seemed genuinely interested in the story. The Leo said he'd do a little research on the case, but couldn't recall any unsolved missing person cases on the forest. I never saw the hunter again. Just before Christmas last year, I noticed a familiar photograph in the local newspaper. The photo accompanied the hunter's obituary. He died in his sleep after suffering a massive heart attack. My blood ran cold. Did the hunter's heavy heart fail during a third awful dream about that lady that disappeared just south of Colt Killed Creek? Chances are, we'll never know.
Hey everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and this January I am launching my new show, The Laura Ingraham Show Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So if you like my radio show, you're going to love joining me during the week as I cover politics, pop culture, and media bias. And don't worry, as always, I'm going to bring you hard-hitting guests and take your calls. Subscribe today and download new episodes starting January exclusively on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Beyond the darkness.
Welcome back to the show, and we love the brand new Theater of the Mind. We love getting your stories. And if you can write your real paranormal account in a narrative form, send it to me at dave@darknessradio.com, and we may use it on an upcoming episode. Or remember, if you want to be a part of our Saturday shows and our Parashare, you can always email in your story to me. It doesn't have to be as long and descriptive. And you can also call and leave a voicemail, 651-300-4977. That's our Voices from Beyond call-in line, 651-300-4977. Let us know what's going on. We would love to hear from you and your stories so that we can feature them on upcoming episodes of the best in paranormal talk radio. Hey, Tim.
Yes.
Tim.
Yes.
Hey, Tim.
Yes.
Tim.
Yeah.
You're a fan of The Walking Dead, right?
Yes, I am.
What do you get when you put a homicidal one-eyed governor together with a maniacal bat-swinging curmudgeon, a man named Jesus, and a radio show host?
Well, I say your odds aren't very good because...
Yeah, it wouldn't be normally, but I'm on the Walker Stalker Cruise this February 21st through the 25th from Tampa to Nassau. It is their final Walker Stalker Cruise, their finale. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Melissa McBride, Chandler Riggs, Kerry Payton, Alana Masterson, David Morrissey, the governor, Lori Holden, Ross Marquand, Tom Payne, Sarah Wayne Callies, Cooper Andrews, Seth Gillum, Michael Trainer, Kaylee Fleming, and Yvette Nicole Brown will all be on board. We're going to have a great time. Tickets are on sale right now. You can join us on that cruise and have a great time. I'm going to be hosting a couple of panels. I'll be doing some scary talks. I'd love for you guys to come on out and hang out. You can go get information at walkerstalkercruise.com. And it's great because these cruises, as you know, we just got off the Jericho cruise. These celebrities are around the boat. They're hanging out. You get a chance to drink and gamble and mingle and listen to bands and have a great time. And it was so much fun on the Jericho cruise. And I know they're getting, I think they're going to have one in 2020, Tim. I believe that's the rumble in the jungle, is that they may be getting back together for the Jericho 2.
That's the rumor, Dave. There's nothing confirmed. Mm-hmm. Nothing confirmed.
But I think it's supposed to. We might hear some information coming soon about that. But if you can't wait and you want to join me on the Walker Stalker Cruise, it'll be again out of Tampa to Nassau, Bahamas, February 21st through the 25th. Go to walkerstalkercruise.com. That's walkerstalkercruise.com. Come on out and have some fun with me. And well, Dave, that's great. But I'm a landlubber. I don't like getting on a giant boat, Dave. I don't like sailing through the middle of the Bermuda Triangle with you, Dave, with all of my favorite actors from The Walking Dead. No, that doesn't sound enticing to me. What I'd like to do is go to Texas, Dave. What can you do for me if I'm in Texas? Well, Bad Wolf Events presents the Bayou City Paranormal Symposium at the Lone Star Convention and Expo Center. That's March 9th and 10th. You can get information at badwolfevents.com. That's badwolfevents.com. I'll be there with Nick Redfern, Nikki Folsom, Robert Murch, the Kling Brothers, Richard Estep, Greg Lawson, Peter Haviland, Ken Gerhard, and John Capello, among others. We're going to have a great time at the Bayou City Paranormal Symposium. You can get this information and more simply by visiting darknessevents.com. Darknessevents.com. It'll show you all of the places that Tim and I will be throughout the year. And we've both been signed on for the 10th annual, the big 10th anniversary of the Michigan Paracon that'll be taking place in, I believe it's August, right?
Yes, in August.
Yeah, I think, mid-August, and we're going to have banners up for that and information. This is going to be one of their biggest blowouts. You guys don't want to miss it. It is the premier paranormal conference of the year at the Michigan Paracon. Keep checking darknessevents.com for updates and information on that. I believe tickets are going on sale if they haven't already. So we'll have a banner up. We were just both confirmed. We're going to be doing Cursed Hollywood. And Tim and I will be talking about famous Hollywood haunts, cursed items, cursed movies. It's going to be a great time. So make sure you stop in and get tickets to the Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie and have a good time for the 10th anniversary show there. Let's get back to it with today's program, Light in the Morning, Memoirs of an Undertaker's Daughter, Margot Lenmark, our guest. When you start making these connections to the other side, Margot, would you physically see these spirits? Were they more like a mental image of spirits that would come to you?
Yeah, it was more of a mental image rather than a physical. And it goes along with that same cognitive thing where you see it in your mind as if you're looking at it with your eyes, but it's not with the physical eyes. It's like, I guess, the mind's eye, you could call it. But yeah, you see it.
And
you see what
was there
you,
anything off about the way they appeared? I mean, did they look as they did in life? Would there be part of the misty or see-through? How would you really describe what it was like to witness these beings?
The way I described it, I mean, the way I would describe it is energetically, it was absolutely being with that person. You know, if they would hug you, it was the same hug. If they talked, it was the same talk. So it wasn't seeing a physical form. It's so hard to explain, but it's seeing the person with your inner eye. And it's not even a physical form. You just see them. You see, I guess, energetically, you see them. And it's the same experience as if you were with them in person. The very same experience. Same voice, same touch, same everything.
Did they ever seem surprised that you could see them?
No, I keep coming back to my brother's story. And he, when I saw, I'll tell you how I found him. I went on a shamanic journey. It's like a shamanic journey with a person who led me to him. And throughout this journey, I was walking down this path. And when I got to the end of the path, she asked me, do you see the meadow? And I said, yes. And she said, look across the meadow. And I did. And she said, is Mike there? And I went, yes. There he was. And he wasn't surprised to see me at all, because she told me, she said, he's been waiting to say goodbye. He's been waiting for you. And so, no, he wasn't surprised at all. He was just, I could see that he was, if he had guides with him, he was telling them, just wait, I've got to say goodbye to my sister. He was adamant, and he was just standing there waiting for me to come to him. And I did. I found him. And so it was this beautiful experience that we had together. I talked a mile a minute for a while with him. And then my guide, who was taking me on the shamanic journey, she said to me, okay, now take his hand. And I did. And she said, walk back across the meadow. And I did. She said, do you see the stairs? I said, yes. She said, walk up the stairs. And I did. She said, do you see the light? And I said, yes. She said, walk him into the light. And I did. And when I did that, she said, now let go of his hand. And I did. And he walked right into the light. And then he never looked back. That was it. He was gone. And that was really a powerful, powerful experience. So it was all very real on that, whatever level that is, astral level or whatever level you're on when you experience somebody on the other side. It was just as real as in real life.
Now, with that ability, you know, you'd want information. Are the spirits in that realm forthcoming, or are they very secretive of what information
not
they're
at
willing
all.
To pass
not,
on?
No, not secretive at all. Just right there. It's exactly the same as they were in real life. Maybe, maybe if they were very secretive, secretive with you in life, they would be that way there too. I don't know. But no, Mike and I were just like we were in real life, just talking, sharing, you know. And it wasn't even profound talk. It was just like what I've been doing and what he's been. I mean, it was me talking to him, so I didn't hear what he was doing, but I was just talking a mile a minute when I saw him. I was so excited to see him, you know. So no, it was exactly like real life. Not secretive at all. Just right there available.
What type of questions do you ask when you speak to them? See, I think I would be so fascinated. And, you know, I mean, I had a dream visitation with my grandfather. But if I were able to actually see and communicate with a ghost on the regular, and it wasn't just a dream form, man, I think I'd go into Darkness Dave mode and go into interview, ability. But what type of information have they given you about life and death and that transition?
Okay, well, let me tell you, I keep using Mike's example because we've started it and we've kind of gone deeply into it. So with Mike, what happened is after I led him into the light, he was gone and he didn't come to me in dreams to tell me he wasn't dead. None of that happened anymore. It was done. He had crossed over to the other side. And what happened with him is it was about a year later, and it was right around the anniversary of his death. He came to me in a dream, just as clear as in real life. And there I was in the dream talking to him a mile a minute again, so excited to see him. And I asked him, Mike, when do I get to see you again? When do we get to be together again? And he told me it's not about that. And I said, what's it about? And he said, it's about how you are. In other words, it's about how you are in your moments with no matter who you're with. In other words, I was so attached to my brother that I couldn't wait to be with him again. And I had to ask him that question when I would be with him again. And his answer to me was, it's not about being with me again. It's about you being completely in the moment with whoever you are with. And that was a big message for me. It really created some detachment in me to my brother because I was not wanting to hear that. I wanted to hear that I'd be with him again and when. But he said, it's not about being with me or anybody. It's about you living your moments to the fullest, no matter who you're with, no matter with whether I'm in your moments or not. So that was a big revelation to me. I had many layers of that revelation after I woke up. And the layers came like this, like when I woke up and was really going deep on that thought that he had just given me. You know, we have people, it's when we look out of our eyes, we have people in front of us at all times. You know, oftentimes it's people going, you know, through our life as our parents or our children or our friends or whatever, our spouse. And no matter who you're with, though, that's going to change. It's all going to change and it's going to keep changing. And some people go in front of us, you know, some people are in our life more than others. And so it doesn't matter who you're with and how often you're with that person. What matters is the moment and how you are living your moments. And so his message was very profound to me and it put me in the moment so that whoever I'm with, I'm really living it to the fullest with that person, knowing that I may never see that person again. I now know that I may never see my brother again. I hope that's not the case, but who knows? Who knows? We can't foresee any of that. And so that was a really important message that he gave me because I was so attached to him and I couldn't wait to see him again in some lifetime or something. But I didn't get that message.
Right. He didn't really understand that he was dead. He didn't understand what had happened. Did he, once you kind of brought him to that consciousness, to that awareness, did he start to have memory of the moment, or have you spoken to any of these spirits that talked to you of what the last few moments of life and the first few moments of death feel like?
No, I never have had that, that conversation. And I wish I would have, you know, I wish I would know that because, what I do know about crossing over is only, and it's not from my own experience. I haven't died and come back. I'm not one of those stories, but I have had some near death experiences. And in those near death experiences, here's what I have found. I was in about to be in a really bad car accident. It didn't turn out to be that way. But what happened is that everything went into very, very slow motion, really slow motion. And I sat there in complete silence witnessing what was going on. And I thought, okay, so the car's turning around and I'm going to probably flip over maybe. And then it hit the guardrail and I didn't. I said, okay, so now I'm back in the middle of the road and I'm just observing, just exactly like I'm telling you. And then the car came to a stop in the middle of the road sideways. And I, because it was such slow motion, I had time to think through the whole thing. I thought, okay, now I could jump out of the car and run across the street and let the car be totaled. Or I could turn the wheel a little bit and put on the gas and try to get over in that other lane before that other car hits me. And just as I had that thought, I started doing that and I got in the other lane and it wasn't a car accident. I was in the other lane and I was just fine. My heart started to beat like crazy. And I thought, wow, that was really interesting. And what I do know is that if that car had hit me, I was already out of my body and I wouldn't have felt a thing. I was already out of my body. I was kind of witnessing and making decisions in that slow motion. And that's what I really believe happens when people die. if it's a car accident or a plane crash or whatever it is, I really think that's what happens when people die, is that everything goes into slow motion. Everything is clear as a bell. And it's, to them, seems like a long time, you know, and they just slip out of their body. And I don't think they feel pain. The 9/11 plane crash, I don't think they felt any pain. I really don't. Just based upon, I've had three near death experiences in cars, and every time it happened that same way. And so I'm pretty convinced that when someone dies, their spirit leaves the body really quickly, and they don't feel the physical pain of it. They just feel that whatever it is, probably a euphoric release when they leave the body.
Tim, the most important takeaway from what you just said is don't ever get in the car with Margo.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. I don't know if you picked up three near-death escapes in a car. Margo, you are not one I'm going to drive with at any given point in history.
And you know
although
what? I
guess you'd see
living.
It coming. Oh, jeez. See, it's like that. What's that saying? When I die, I want to go like my grandfather, sleep peacefully in my sleep, but not like the passengers in his car.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
There is this, you know, and it's certainly been a big drive for me, this fascination with death and the concept of death. And I am interested by the fact that you say that, you know, we're kind of, the consciousness does leave the body in before those moments. So there isn't really a break. But you had this moment where all of a sudden you were kind of outside seeing, you were, you know, was there any kind of awareness of the fact that you were not in your body other than seeing it kind of unfold before you? Was it like a conscious thought of, oh, I'm not there?
No, it was not. It was just this really fluid awareness that was very clear and very aware. It was pure awareness of the moment and calmness. It was absolutely silent and calm. There was not any nervousness. And that's the reason I know that I wasn't in the body. Or maybe I was just more expanded than the body or something. I don't know exactly how to describe that, but it was definitely not a physical experience. It was quiet. It was calm. I had time to think. I thought through it. I made a decision and boom. And it wasn't like flashing back into the body. But what I did know is when I did drive away, when I made that decision and did that, and this, we're probably talking about seconds, but to me, it felt like I had about 10 minutes to think through all of that. It felt like a long time. And so when everything was back to normal and I'm driving down the road, then my heart really started beating. I'm like, oh my God, because it was very hairy. It was a scary experience, but I didn't experience it with any fear at all. And it was only when I got back in my body, or, you know, was aware of being in my body again, that I felt my heart pounding and things like that. The adrenaline was up, and, you know, because it was something. It really happened, you know, but the internal experience of it while it was happening was pure silence. It was amazing. Calm as could be. So if I had crashed, I would have just floated away and not even known or not even felt anything physically.
So there's not necessarily a pull to the soul of wanting to stay, of feeling a loss. You see, I always think that's what I'm going to do. If I broke free from my physical form, I feel that it would be terror and desperation because I don't want to not be here.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I think a lot of people have that experience. I think, and this hasn't been my experience, but I've had a friend of mine almost died, and she had a choice to come back, and she decided to come back for her daughter. And she made that very clear decision, and she came back into the body. So I think people do have sometimes choices. I think every situation is pretty different from every other situation, but I know that certain people have made the choice to come back. They didn't want to leave. So I think that's the case sometimes. You know, in my case, I guess I wasn't supposed to die, so I didn't have a choice. I wasn't even thinking about dying or not. I just thought, this is what's happening, and the car's going to crash now, and this is what's going to happen, and none of it happened. And so I didn't have to make a choice. I just didn't die. The car didn't crash. But I know people have made that decision. So I think some people, I think you feel that way before you die, but I bet you the moment you stop breathing, you'll never think that thought again. You'll just be in this wonderful flow of exhilarated energy. That's
I don't know. I think Tim, I think that when I break from this mortal coil,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be like that scene in Star Wars when the Death Star blows up Alderaan and okay. Obi-Wan feels the screams from millions of lives. Mm-hmm. I think across the universe it'll be, no more McRibs! No more Twinkies! No! That's what will be heard through all time and space, Tim.
No, probably, yeah. Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Well, then I hope you live forever because we have to keep Twinkies.
Well, I'm pretty sure if I eat Twinkies and McRibs, I'm going to preserve myself forever. It just there's so many inorganic things in both that my body will not be allowed to break down.
That's right. That's right. So we won't ever have to hear that.
Oh, God. Well, we'll see. And I promise you, I will come knocking if that's the case.
Yeah, you come knock and we'll chat.
Are you ever in dealing with this? Are you ever unnerved or frightened by these experiences?
No, not at all. Not one of them.
Have you ever come up against a place or a negative ghost?
No. Okay, no, I will say no. I have had experiences of ghosts, like in houses and things like that. And that experience, when you experience just a ghost, like let's just say you're falling asleep and you're in a strange place and there's a ghost in the place and you experience it, it's blood curdling. I mean, it's just you freeze. You really freeze. To me, that's kind of a scary experience. I do know, though, that you can get rid of those energies quite easily. They're there. They can hear you. You tell them to leave. You tell them to go back to the light and they do that. They'll listen to you, you know? So I've had experiences of ghosts. I've gotten rid of ghosts and the experience of a ghost in the room. That's a different thing than all the experiences that I'm talking about, because mine are these experiences of communicating with people that I know. And it's been really beautiful experiences. But yeah, when there's a ghost in the room in a strange place, I think that's, it feels scary. It's kind of, I kind of freeze up, but then they go away. You tell them to leave and they do.
And
so I don't think they're negative. I just think it's kind of scary. It's kind of, ghosts are kind of scary.
Do you ever come across unearthly beings, whether they're alien, demonic, angelic?
No, I think my experience is pretty much just with the people that I know that have left. I do believe in angels. I think angels are amazing. I feel like I think I have like an angelic guide or somebody around me. I think we probably all do, but no, I've never experienced that.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious.
Dynamic.
You know, or dynamic. Either one is good to not.
Or dynamic. Not dynamic or demonic. You heard that.
Economic ghosts, anything like that? All right. So be in the moment.
Economic one.
Be in the moment. Be aware. You feel that we're really not connected to the physical form or sense of death, which is good news and information. What have they told you about religion? Is there a G-O-D, or is there something different?
I've never been told that. I just feel like there is definitely some really cosmically organized plan to everything. I feel that from all these experiences, even though I can't imagine none of these people talk to me about religion, and I don't think they would have necessarily. Because I definitely believe in G-O-D, and I think there at least is some higher divine plan or source or something. And I think that all the experiences that I've had kind of verify that.
All right. I was just curious if that comes up or, you know, do you feel, see, that would be all the stuff I'd be wondering is, you know, what happens to us at that point? You know, are we, you know, do we face these beings? Is there something to that aspect? Because I don't know, you know, I don't know what's more frightening to find out that there is or isn't.
That's a really great point. It's a really great point.
All right. Two great questions and a great point, Tim. Tell me what I won.
Another question.
I was at least hoping for a week's supply of Rice-A-Roni. The San Francisco treat. No dice.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, what would be scarier to you to find out that there is one God and that this kind of judgment and all of that exists, or that, you know, we just go on and there's no necessarily any kind of hierarchy? It's just an existence in another form.
Yeah, I don't think either of them sound too scary. I mean, the judgment God, I think, does sound a little bit scary, but, you know, I feel differently about that. So I'm not worried about that. I think the judgment comes every moment of our life. I think hell is lived on earth. I think heaven is lived on earth. I think we all live it within our being. You've experienced that where you can't sleep at night because something happened during the day and maybe you forgot something on a contract or something, and like, and you freak out at night, or you do something actually wrong and you can't sleep. And I think we live our little hells every day, or our heavens every day. And so I don't really believe it. It's just my belief, but, and nobody's told me this, but I don't think there's this place we go to. I think there's this place that lives within us based upon how we've been and how our actions have been and how much love we've experienced versus how much hate or negativity we've experienced. So, you know, I guess I don't worry about that judgment too much. I hope it's not there. I hope it's not a heaven and hell, but I think we kind of live it in our daily life. I don't think it's something that just comes to us afterward. I think it's here and now is how I feel.
Tim, I mean, here's an interesting opportunity, Tim. I mean, do you have any questions as well? I don't want to put you on the spot, but, you know, I run most of these interviews, and I know talking to somebody that's had this opportunity herself and to have been given this kind of wisdom and information and insight, sometimes there's stuff you would have liked to have known.
Well, it's interesting that earlier in the interview, you said something about you would go into Darkness Dave mode and go into, especially with dream visitations and stuff like that, and go into interview mode. And in my experience, I've always been in the, I don't want to say passive mode, but you're shocked when that happens to you, I think. And I tend to have been in passive mode when it happens to me. And I find the experience happens to you. And a lot of times you're kind of thrown in defensive mode, and you end up, the questions you end up asking end up happening in the scenario based moment. So like, much like you were describing, with your brother, you were happy to see him, and you kept asking questions, and it seemed like it was whatever was on the top of your head. And the scenarios that I was in, a lot of it had to do with the scenario that I was in at the time. You know, I would ask questions based on the scenario because I think I couldn't believe that I wasn't in a dream. It felt real, but I questioned the reality that I was in. And much like you just stated, you kind of, and maybe I'm getting this wrong, you're saying that you believe that we go to this reality based on how good we've been, well, or you know, the type of love that we've received and given out. That would suggest to me that there's many, many different layers of where we go. So how do we ever run into each other? You know, I think.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And how do we run into each other?
Oh, shit. Are you kidding me? He gets such a really good question.
Oh, no, I gave him a good question.
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, Tim, that's a really good question. Now I'm never going to stop hearing from these listeners. See, you should let Tim talk more because he asks really good questions.
Really good questions.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, there is never black and white in this world. There's really just, and don't hit me with the romance stuff here, but there's shades of gray. We really are multifaceted people. And to me, it seems like there's a sliding scale as to how much good and love we put out there into the universe. So to me, we may just be ships passing in the night in the afterlife if that's how we're graded. To me, it would seem that there would have to be a mutual meeting place that we all see each other on the other side. Wouldn't that be more accurate, or am I off base there?
I kind of think we're going to see each other again. I really do. But whether we spend time with each other, I think, is a different thing. Here's a really good analogy that I think is good. I was going to a seminar in Vegas once, and I wrote out my will. I wasn't driving, Dave, but I wrote out my will because I hadn't written one yet, and I thought I should have one. And so I wrote out a will, said goodbye to my partner, and got on the plane and landed in Vegas and met a friend, and the friend Ubered us over to this hotel. And when we got in the hotel, I get into the lobby, and there's all these friends I hadn't seen for 15 years or 10 years or something. And it was like, oh my God, hello, hello. And it was like so fun to see all these people. So at the seminar, it was kind of a metaphysical seminar. And at the seminar, I said, you know, I use this trip as sort of a metaphor for life and death. You know, it was almost like I died from being in Boone, and I got on a plane and went somewhere, and a guide took me to this new hotel, and in the lobby, there's all these people I know. And I kind of think that's what happens when we die, is that we're going to be transported. We go somewhere else, and when we get there, there's all these people that we knew from our previous life. And I think it's a really good metaphor, because I really do think that that's what's going to happen. So I do think we see each other. But I just think that, you know, when I got that message from my brother that it doesn't matter who we're with, it just matters how we are with whoever we are with, you're going to be with the people that you have to work things out with or learn from or whatever. Whatever gives you the most in this next lifetime is who you're going to end up being with, and it may not be all those people. So that's why I think you have to kind of love the one you're with. You have to be in the moment with whoever you're with and all of these people.
Now, yeah, yeah. there's another thing that's kind of popped up too here, and that is, in all the correspondences you've had with people on the other side, and it could be with relatives, it could be with people you know, it could be with whoever, has anyone ever said to you, although I miss you, and I'm here on the other side, and I'll see you when you get here, we'll also see each other in another life? In other words, have they brought up the insistence that maybe the journey doesn't end on the other side, that maybe you'll continue on in another life? Have they brought up reincarnation to you?
No. I just believe in reincarnation from one experience that I had with somebody. I mean, I've had different experiences of people in the physical body in this lifetime. It's kind of flashes of having met them before, and I can't even tell you the details, but I know I've been with them before. So what you just said about it happens to you, I that's been at least my experience. I would love to go into interview mode. I wish I was aware enough to say, okay, I've got 20 questions, quick, answer them for me, because I do have questions and I want them all answered by these people. But at the time when somebody comes to you, you don't have time to think about it. You are in the moment with that person, and there is something kind of at the top of the list that gets conveyed. And that's kind of how it's worked for me. So, it's not like people have come and just laid out a plan of how life is or anything. There's just these very specific messages that were given in different ways from these people. And so that's what I was saying in the beginning. I don't have any control over it. If I did, I would interview them. I'd say, okay, what happened when you died? Did you remember me? Did this? I would have all kinds of questions for these people, but I am not in that frame of mind. When they come to me, something else happens other than that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of akin to the initial shock of somebody showing up on your doorstep that you hadn't seen in 20 years. You know,
exactly.
Just ringing the doorbell and all of a sudden they're there and you hadn't had any contact with them. You know, the first thing you think is, oh my God, I'm so glad you're here. And the second question is, how did you get here?
Right.
You know, and then you try to put pieces together, but your brain is in such overload that it's hard to form words, much less questions. And it's that initial shock that you try to get through to try to make sense of it. And then you're thinking, okay, what am I surrounded by and why am I here? And am I really in a dream, or am I really on the other side right now, and is this really even happening to me? And as mm-hmm. And by the time you actually get a grasp of where you are and what it is you're doing, the experience is almost over. And I think they almost catch on, like, you know, this person's getting it, that we're actually communicating. And I think they cut mm-hmm. it off for the sake of, they get that you're aware, and they get that they know mm-hmm. that you're in the moment. And now you may start asking some questions. And I guess in a wrestling term, they know you want to be smartened up, and they know that you yeah. you want to know, and they can only show their hand so much. So they choose to cut mm-hmm. off the communication at that time. At least that's my belief.
Yeah, I think that could probably be the case, because that's what I mean about you don't have any control over it. It kind of happens to you, and you get what you get, and it's a gift. It's like awesome, you know. And afterward, it's like the day after your Vikings game, you think of all kinds of things you could have asked, but if you could have, you would have, you know, but you didn't even get to that thinking process. You know, it wasn't like that. So I agree. I think it's more of a spontaneous event that was meant to happen, but it's pretty fleeting also.
I know one thing that's asked a lot about psychics is their guides. Have you met your guides? Have you met the people that have kind of guided you along with your gift? Have they made an appearance as you've went to talk to these different relatives on the other side? Have they made themselves known?
No, nope. I've never met them. It's really odd because I've heard that a lot, and I think there are guides. I'm pretty sure I have guides. I think I do, but I have never met them. I don't know anything about them. All I know is the experiences I have is probably a result of them, but that's all I know is the experience that comes out of it. No, I haven't met any of my guides.
And you should have stopped with that very first really good question, Tim.
Well, I'm just kidding.
She's hard, she's hard to get more love from after that. I got you.
I'm just these are just some of the things that just kind of popped up that are curious. That's all.
No, those were great
questions.
No, those
were really good questions.
Really good.
They were great questions from both of you.
I got to live with this guy now, and I was going, oh, you know, I asked really good questions last week, Dave. Can I speak again? And it's going to make it hard for me to tell him no.
And then he won't let me out of the chains in the basement. So,
that's right.
It just gets tougher and tougher.
Just start rattling him.
Yeah.
What, you know, we're running out of time here, Margo. Tim, I'm sorry, wasted so much of your time. Yeah. No, I just kid. But, what do you want to leave our listeners with? I mean, the culmination of your book and the stories that you share, what do you really hope people can take from this?
What I hope they can take is that I really believe that when people die that are close to you, there's a process of grieving that you go through. And if you really allow yourself to really be with that process, I think there's real gifts in the grieving. That's where I got these gifts from people. It was through grieving their loss. And I can't tell you where that grief took me. And it's not to be attached to the grief. It's not that at all. It's just that I have a chapter in my book called Good Grief. And I think it's really good to allow yourself to fully grieve the person and not be afraid to do that. Because once you get through the grief, you automatically start feeling better. And it really, really helps you. But meanwhile, I think...
Okay, we'll define that. If you don't mind, let me just ask you on that. Define, okay. Follow through on the grieving process. How do you do that? How do you know when? Because, you know, I think I've tried to grieve my mom as much, but I know I hold back, and I don't know if that's why I keep having such a rough time. But how do you know when is enough? And you know, that you're not just belaboring it.
Yes, that's a great question. It really is, because that really is a great question. That's why I put that chapter in there, because there is, when you're grieving, you shouldn't hold back on grieving your mother. You should feel that pain. What happens is when you feel the pain and you remember your mother, these memories come up and whatever, you kind of process that. And what that does is it incorporates the memory of your mother into your heart. And there's a real process to that. There's a mechanics to it where you remember, you cry, you feel a little bit better. A little bit later, you remember a different memory, you cry. Every time you go through that cycle, you are incorporating her into your heart. And what you are doing is you are, that's how she lives forever in you. And I really believe that people live on in our heart, and they live fully in our heart by fully grieving them. And that's our link to the divine, to the eternal. That is our link to the other side, to what's permanent. So I think the grieving process is one of the most important things we can go through, which is why I put, you know, a whole chapter in there. And there's a couple of quotes I put in there that says that grieving is natural because it allows the soul to know that they were deeply loved, but it's just as natural for the grieving to subside so that the soul knows that they are not a drag on your life. And I think you get to that natural subsiding by really grieving. And you'll know, because you can't force yourself to cry. When those memories kind of stop a little bit and, you know, start thinning out, and you cry less and they thin out more and you cry less, then you've kind of gotten over it. And by experiencing that deep pain in your heart, what happens is that deep pain fills up with really great joy when the pain leaves. And that's the point of grieving, is you have more of them in you, and you have even more joy in your heart afterward. And that's why that grieving is such an important process.
Thank you for that. Thank you for the insights. Light in the Morning, Memoirs of an Undertaker's Daughter, Margot Lenmark, our guest. It's been a pleasure, Margot. Thank you for jumping on and spending a little time with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Dave and Tim. I've enjoyed it.
And thank you all for tuning in and being a part of our world. Remember, there's a link right to her book in today's podcast, so you can find that and go get the book. And remember, when you read these books and you get these books, make sure to go in and rate them. Give them 5 stars. Let people know about these books. That's how these authors get heard more. Their stories get shared. And if you want to keep seeing great paranormal conversations like this continue, it's encouraging authors to keep coming out and sharing their stories. So make sure you do that, and always go there and rate it. And if you are an iTunes listener, please rate our show. As a matter of fact, you can rate our program on iTunes. Give it 5 stars. It costs you nothing. As a matter of fact, you should tell them you want to give us 10 stars, but five will do. Just give us the full amount of stars. Tell everybody what a great show Beyond the Darkness is, and continue to share that. We'll be back Tuesday with a brand new edition of True Crime Tuesday. And you can hear me Monday through Friday with the best of Anomalous Talk Radio at midnightinthedesert.com. That's it for this week. For that guy, I'm this guy. You've been listening to that show. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all, and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.